Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
Support our programming at patreon.com/rebelforceradio. Become a patron, and your contributions can help unlock bonus shows from RFR, online hangouts with the Rebel Force Radio crew, and more. Say it loud and say it proud. Support Rebel Force Radio. Click on the Patreon banner at rebelforceradio.com or visit patreon.com/rebelforceradio.
Rebel Force Radio is brought to you in part by Little Debbie Snacks, bakers of all galactic goodness, like mini donuts, Star Crunch, cosmic cupcakes, cosmic brownies, nutty bars, and much more. Little Debbie, official snack of Rebel Force Radio and fans around the galaxy. DorksideToys.com. For the latest Star Wars action figures, Marvel, G.I. Joe, and more, visit DorksideToys.com. From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, Star Wars Card Trader. For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, all from the comfort of your mobile device. Star Wars Card Trader. These are the cards you're looking for.
Rebel Force Radio presents...
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen.
This is Star Wars Rebels Declassified.
I like the sound of that.
A roundtable discussion about Star Wars Rebels.
Pretty gutsy move, kid.
I am the Inquisitor.
We're busted.
Chopper, get us out of here.
Now it's time for Star Wars Rebels Declassified.
There's a lot of pressure with an episode like this. I kind of, in a weird way, you know, it's a lot easier to do roundtable discussions about episodes like The Call. But this is huge. People dying to know what did we all think about the big season two finale of Star Wars Rebels, The Twilight of the Apprentice, parts 1 and 2. Huge episode, not just for Star Wars Rebels, but has ramifications across the Star Wars universe and the whole saga. And we've got a fantastic, fantastic panel to break it all down for you this week on Rebel Force Radio, Rebels Declassified. This is going to wrap things up for this season. So this will be the end, but it's a great opportunity for you to go back and catch up on episodes that you might have missed over the course of the season. And then you can hear about what we thought about it too. So like I said, great panel, including and starting with my good friend and yours from Chicago, Jimmy Mack.
Hey, Jason. Hey, Star Wars fans. Thanks for getting the pecking order correct this week, Jason. Spencer laughs, but hey, you know, this is an episode we've all been looking forward to ever since Ahsoka re-entered into the ring at the end of season one of Star Wars Rebels. We knew the showdown was inevitable. We knew it was coming, and wow, quite simply, wow. I saw this episode at the season premiere red carpet event that happened in LA earlier this week. So I've been biting my tongue. There's a lot to say about this episode and a lot to say about character development and character destiny. And I think a lot of that comes to head in this episode of Star Wars Rebels, truly a landmark episode for Star Wars animation with Dave Filoni at the helm. So, gosh, you're right, Jason. What a great roundtable panel we have to discuss Twilight of the Apprentice.
Yeah, so Jim, would it make you feel better if I introduce the intern next?
Sure, yeah. He's earned it this week.
Oh, I just I feel bad because you were so upset about the way I did things last week.
Oh, no, right. after me, it doesn't matter.
Oh, as long as as long as you get your second billing, or first billing, whichever. All right. Anyway, that the cackle that you hear is our pal Spencer Brinkerhoff, the third. Great to have Spencer back.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks, Jimmy. I'm happy to be here in whatever order you need me to be.
Yeah, see, that's what I like. Low maintenance, yes. Spencer. That's what I like.
He's a loyal soldier.
For sure. Also, very privileged to have musician, actor, host of the Star Wars digital stage at Celebrations. Also, the mastermind behind Star Wars Oxygen, which is just everywhere. Everywhere I go online where they're talking about Rebel Force Radio, they're talking about Star Wars Oxygen. We got the main guy here, David W. Collins, with us.
Hey, guys. Wait, where's the fanfare of trumpets? I thought we talked about my intro music. What's going on? High maintenance. Kidding.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what Jimmy does for you on Oxygen. All I know is...
No, thanks. I'm so glad to be here, and I'll be as low maintenance as possible. I swear. I'm just excited to talk about these episodes. They were killer.
They were amazing. They were amazing. So, and rounding out things, we joke, but we couldn't really do what we do. Well, we could, and we have done it without him. But lately, he seems to be of use to us. Tyler, the intern, Tyler Westhouse. Tyler, welcome. To the roundtable. Yeah. Well, we kind of had to.
And StarWars.com author, let's not forget.
That is true. And he's writing some great pieces for StarWars.com. But Tyler, your insights are going to be very, very appreciated here. So let's talk about it. As Jimmy said, this is something we've been waiting for some time since the end of season one. We had a feeling that this was going to happen. This is we're talking about episodes 19 and 20 of season two. Original air date for this, for those of you listening in the future, March 30th, 2016. This episode written by Dave Filoni, Simon Kinberg, and Stephen Melching. That's the dream team there. Directed by Dave Filoni. And I always feel that there is a certain vibe that Dave is able to infuse as a director into these episodes, and they always seem to feel the most Star Wars-y. I mean, if there's anybody that understands the pacing and the tempo in the beats of Star Wars storytelling, it's definitely Dave Filoni, and who else to tell this story, which may or may not be sort of the finale of the character that he helped create, Ahsoka Tano. We don't know. They've left it kind of up to interpretation. In fact, the interviews that Dave has done with IO9 and IGN, really, he's being very noncommittal, though it seems like he's kind of inferring that, or implying rather, that we may have seen the last of Ahsoka in animation, in animated Star Wars for now, that she served her purpose in the story of Kanan and Ezra. But beyond that, there's a lot of very interesting things that happened. Some major moments that I think are going to have serious consequences as we go into season three. But I don't think that we can really get too much further without talking about all of the wild, crazy speculation. I just kind of want to go around and get a sense of whether or not people think that this was really it for Ahsoka. I know we've got a frame at the end of the episode that shows an image of Ahsoka walking into the temple. But Spencer, is this it? I mean, is this the final chapter for Ahsoka Tano?
I think that you made a really good point when you said that this was the end of Ahsoka's interaction with the rebels. One of the other things that Dave Filoni brought up is that Vader is such a powerful character that only someone like Ahsoka can balance that character without taking anything away from his power. So I think that we're really going to see Ahsoka, as she did in this final scene, she's going to step into the shadows. I don't think that she's dead. I think that she's going to sort of retreat back and go into her own sort of personal exile in the same way that Yoda did. So I think that this is kind of the end of Ahsoka in Rebels. But interestingly enough, they also announced that Ahsoka's got a new book coming out, but it's not. It's going to be those in-between times. So that's my take, is that Ahsoka is going to be gone for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, Ahsoka the Lost Years, basically, is what we're looking at with the novel.
Oh, I thought it was the Wonder Years.
David, Ahsoka Tano, dead or alive?
Oh, man. Dead or alive, that is the question. You know, I'm not actually sure, if I have to be honest with everybody here on the panel. I mean, my first gut reaction sitting in the theater, I was lucky to sit next to Jimmy and Kyle Newman. We're sitting there watching this thing, and my first gut reaction was, well, if they leave it ambiguous, then she's alive. If they didn't show her that she's alive. The more I've been thinking about it over the last few days, I think, well, I don't know. I mean, if Darth Vader crawls out of there and he's really hurt, first of all, if he crawls out of there alone, he knows that she's finished, right? Or does he? You know, I mean, it's really hard to tell. I think that, you know, Ahsoka is going to live on, at least we know, in the way that Obi-Wan and Yoda lived on, right? Through the Force or something similar. You know, I don't think that Ahsoka is ever going to completely go away. I think it's become part of Darth Vader's psyche, his whole everything, you know, to do with his guilt, everything that Dave Filoni said about you know, him becoming kind of a monster. And I mean, I don't know, just really, really incredible to speculate, because I think they did this very, very intentionally. I don't think it was just, well, you know, let's just leave it as a cliffhanger. I think that they are heavily insinuating that she died. But they just didn't, they wanted to give us a softball, because, I mean, there are a lot of kids to answer to and a lot of people that grew up with Ahsoka at a very, very young age. I kind of thought about that story from Empire Strikes Back where George Lucas brought in a child psychologist about the Luke, or no, I am your father moment, you know, that, you know, some kids that, you know, could handle it would believe him, and kids that couldn't handle it would just say, oh no, he's just lying. Right. And checked in with a child psychologist about that. I thought this was kind of handled in a similar way. So the more I thought about it, I'm like, well, no, maybe she's gone as we know it. Certainly not gone from our Star Wars entertainment. But I guess a different way to phrase the question is, you know, did she die? Probably not. Did Darth Vader vanquish her and possibly kill her? Yes. Like, it's kind of both, you know?
That's a very political answer.
Yes, and for that answer, David, you have earned your fanfare.
That's a great... Is she dead? No. Did Darth Vader kill her? Yes. all right. No, but I definitely get what you're saying, and I appreciate it very much. Tyler, dead or alive, Ahsoka?
I think she's alive, but I don't think we're going to see her again in Rebels, because the final shot just seemed way too reminiscent of her final appearance in the Clone Wars. Because in the Clone Wars, it was her walking away from the Jedi Temple into the light, so sort of saying, well, she has future stories ahead. In this one, she's just walking into the darkness. So I think she's alive. I don't think that she's going to interact with the Rebels or Vader or anybody anytime soon. Because if I were her, I would just be sick of everything. Thinking, oh, well, Yoda waved at me. And then the place he told us to go to, everything sucked. my old master is a jerk. He doesn't like me. I accidentally cut his face. And he said he's going to kill me. I got hit by a gigantic Sith temple explosion. I'm just sick of this. I'm just going to go hibernate in this cave. Seem to do Darth Maul.
That's a rough day. You know, you just described this is a very bad day. You think you had a rough day? Try living Ahsoka Tano's life. Jimmy Mac, what say you? Dead or alive, Ahsoka Tano?
You want to talk about rough day? Wait till you hear my analysis, okay? Ahsoka was pleading with Anakin, trying to connect with him. She felt bad about leaving him, and she made the pledge that she would not leave him again. this did not affect Anakin. This did not bring Anakin back. Darth Vader remained the dominant personality within him, and he brought the attack to Ahsoka. We didn't see what happened there at the end. But I firmly believe that Darth Vader did kill Ahsoka Tano, yet Ahsoka became one with the Force. And that is what we're seeing there in that final shot with her image fading into the darkness. She has crossed over. She has achieved that level of immortality that has only been achieved by Qui-Gon Jinn, Obi-Wan Kenobi in the future, and of course, Anakin Skywalker and Yoda. She's part of that elite group. However, here is the tragic part, okay? This is the worst part of it all. She has crossed over and she has become one with the Force, yet her Force spirit remains trapped within that the ruins of that Sith temple, and it could be possible that she is doomed to a life, an eternity of confrontations with that Sith presence that existed within the temple itself that was voiced by Nika Futterman. It was this corporeal voice that just spoke to Ezra. There is an absolute presence within that temple slash weapon. And once it got blown to bits, Ahsoka was in there and she's trapped by the Sith right now. She is trapped in the eternal world of the Sith, whatever that is. I think it's been defined that there is no afterlife for the Sith. That's why they seek immortality, but they seek immortality in the physical form. Jedi, via Yoda's, you know, and Qui-Gon's breakthrough, they seek immortality in the spiritual world. They want to become one with the Force. The Sith can't achieve that, but yet there is an energy force that's present within that Sith temple, and we heard the voice of that presence. So it could be that there's a struggle happening between Ahsoka and whatever this Sith presence is within the ruins of this temple, and Ahsoka is trapped in there. So that's why she can't cross over. Now she is stuck in there. And
she's like in some sort of a Jedi or Sith purgatory or
hell, more like hell. It. She cannot escape. Wow. And, you know, so it's tragic. It's become.
Wow. You got all
tragic.
Of that from just her walking into that cave? That's amazing.
Well, it's not just walking into the cave, though. What about that bird thing, that Convor? Is that what it's called?
It's named after Dave's wife, the Convery.
Convery.
The okay. Convery. So this is not the first time we've seen this Convery. We saw that. Apparently we saw it in an episode of Clone Wars where Ahsoka was kidnapped by the Trandoshans. And she ended up in that, you know, being hunted with along with Chewbacca and all of that. So there's apparently, and I haven't been able to really connect the dots, there's some sort of symbolism there.
And then in the last episode, that same bird creature showed up like when Ezra was looking up, and it kind of like followed them out. And the closing shot was very similar to the closing shot we see where Vader is kind of hobbling away, and the bird is up on the ledge there watching what's happening. One of the impressions that I got as I was looking at that and trying to figure out what it was doing there, as soon as it watched Vader walk out, it flew down into the darkness, and that's where we got to see Ahsoka's scene as she walked back into the temple. And one of the thoughts that crossed my mind is in the Mortis trilogy, we had the father, the son, and the daughter, and the daughter represented the light side of the Force, and you know she sacrificed herself in that trilogy. And what ended up happening is that she could transform into a griffin type of creature. And I wondered if this was sort of like one of those little sub creatures or a minion, or somehow related to the daughter. And it was the light side of the Force watching over how the Force was being cared for or taken care of by Anakin and his Padawan Ahsoka, and seeing it through to its end, perhaps.
Wow, that is very interesting. I mean, the fact that we know that the characters in Mortis were very interested in Anakin and watching him with great interest.
Yes.
And so could that have been some sort of watchman, so to speak? That's a very, very cool theory. David, one of the things that we see at the very top of the episode is Ahsoka's conversation with Rex. And there's a direct parallel with the first time we see Ahsoka in the Clone Wars movie and a very similar conversation that they have. But something that's kind of out of character in a sense, if the old Ahsoka, is she's telling Rex, this veteran soldier, warrior, that if it's experience that, you know, creates rank, then she outranks him. What do we take from that to mean in terms of her, that, you know, that period of her kind of out in the wilderness? I mean, she must have seen something pretty serious.
You know, I think that if you're a Force user, that you are in tune to so many different levels of what's going on in the galaxy, and you know, your experience is not just in the here and now, but it's in the past, in the present, in the future. Whether it's a simple sense of foreboding, or whether it's a truly deep understanding of you know, her old master becoming Darth Vader, just, you know, through the Force. I think that Ahsoka at this point in her life has seen and felt so many different things through the Force. I mean, she walked away from the Jedi Order and was Padawan to the most powerful warrior in the Clone Wars on the Republic side, in the Jedi, you know, the Jedi General Anakin Skywalker. I think that scene, it's funny that we're talking about that one line, because, you know, that thought actually kind of just blew right past me. But as soon as that line happened and they went back to Rex and Ahsoka's very first conversation on Christophsis from the original Clone Wars movie, I thought, oh, these are echoes of everything that is past, present, and future. And we got a lot of echoes. I mean, the amount of callbacks that we got in this episode were huge, including callbacks to the Mortis trilogy and to Darth Maul. I mean, he talks to Ezra about breaking his chains, right? Which is straight from the Sith code, right? Now my chains are broken, you know, about setting yourself free with anger and all of those things. The callback to Yoda, you know, put your weapon away, I mean, you know, harm, you know, the dark side. I mean, he was flat out quoting Palpatine. He was quoting something that Yoda says in the future. You know, the Earth shifted in this episode in a way that was really, really epic. There's rebels before these two episodes, and there's rebels after. And you can even see it. You can hear it in the script, you know, in terms of like, you know, George talks about everything rhyming, you know, but you can also see it in the lighting. I mean, the lighting was just ridiculous. The new set pieces. I mean, we were treated to two episodes that felt like the Clone Wars, although it looked even better. I mean, dare I say, I mean, it just, I could not believe how good it looked, you know, seeing it on the big screen. It just, the whole thing just blew me away. And I think that that is all, as Dave Filoni said in the Q&A, very, very intentional. Everything that they do is very intentional. Nothing is by accident. And they started the episode off, Jason, with that conversation to bring, I think, Ahsoka's journey to a full circle, or a full, you know, to close the circle, maybe, as this would be her death. And look, one last thing about her death. Absolutely. She's got to go some, all the Jedi, all the Sith, all the Inquisitors have to go somewhere sometime before episode 4, right? I'm assuming that's right, right?
Yeah. Otherwise you break Star Wars, right? Eventually they all have to go somewhere. So,
yeah, so right. Don't break Star Wars.
At some point,
don't break this Star Wars.
Somewhere.
So, yeah, I mean, why not give it this epic treatment? Everything about the epic nature of this makes me think that this was Ahsoka's farewell tour. But you know how farewell tours go, you know?
Yeah, right.
Right.
You think it's over, and then suddenly, Ozzy's out going, I'm going to do one more. I'm going to do one more.
I remember watching The Who in 1982 on a pay-per-view special doing their final concert. Gentlemen, I saw The Who in concert 3 weeks ago. Nothing ever goes away.
The band isn't even alive anymore. See, there you go. You know, The Who is dead. Long live The Who, right? It's the same with Ahsoka.
Tyler, I know one of the things that you were wanting to talk about is in addition to, as David was saying, all the echoes in the references to the Star Wars trilogy, the films, and especially the Clone Wars. But there's also some throwbacks and some allusions to the old expanded universe, the legends. Including the planet Malachor, the Sith Holocron. What are some of those things for guys like you that are big fans of those stories that you thought were cool to have seen in this episode?
Well, seeing Malachor and just hearing Malachor in general was really, really, really exciting for me. Back when we did the declassified for the trailer, I predicted that it was going to be Malachor that was a planet, and I was correct, and when Yoda said Malachor, I was crazy excited. Now, this Malachor is very similar, but also very different than the Malachor that I know from the Expanded Universe. The background of this Malachor seems like a mix of two events from the old Expanded Universe that are somewhat connected. One is the Battle of Malachor 5, which was expanded upon in the video game Knights of the Old Republic 2. That was a battle that took place on Malachor. It was a battle between the Jedi and the Mandalorians, and also seems to be a mix with the Battle of Rusan, which apparently took place like 1,000 years before the Phantom Menace, and that was between the Jedi and the Sith. And the way that battle ended was there was this gigantic explosion that basically wiped everybody out. And the weapon in the Sith Temple in this episode seemed very similar to the Thought Bomb from the Battle of Rusan, which was the big weapon that wiped everything out. And the fact that there's a holocron with a female Sith Lord on Malachor makes me think that it might be a character named Darth Treya, who is from the Knights of the Old Republic video games. In an interview that Dave did, he said something along the lines of, I have a name for the female Sith Lord. I just need to make sure people are okay with it, which makes me think, oh, he picked Darth Treya. I think it'd be really fascinating because the Darth Treya character has parallels to Maul in this episode as well, because Maul hates the Sith, but he still is Sith. And a big part of the Darth Treya character is that she hates being Sith, but she still is Sith at heart. So I think if they expanded upon that, and at some point, it doesn't need to be immediate. I already got my Malachor fill, but if they expand on the Malachor backstory a little bit more, that would make me very excited. But as an EU nerd, I am very, very much excited.
And as well, you should be. And it's not the first time, you know. Obviously, that Dave and his team have borrowed from Legends, and I think going back to, you know, the initial announcement that the Expanded Universe was going to be relegated to Legends, there was always talk about this being a treasure trove of stories and ideas that were, you know, could perhaps resurface in the future. So
yeah, Ahsoka said it in this episode. She said there's always a bit of truth in Legends.
That's right.
Which should be a nod to nerdy fans like me. Like, we could make your Legend stories true, or we couldn't.
that's a great observation. I did not put that together. That's very good, Spencer. You know, with Darth Maul being there, the Inquisitors being there, something I hadn't, I've been kind of grappling with this, and you don't want to, you know, it's a television show. Obviously, you know, things are thrown in for dramatic purposes and all of that. But, you know, what did you make of the fact that there was this kind of confluence, this convergence, rather, of Maul, the Inquisitors, and Vader? Was it a coincidence, or was this some sort of orchestrated thing? Was it perhaps the Force bringing all of these events together? There was definitely talk about, at least from Vader, that the Emperor had foreseen this. Certainly, perhaps Ahsoka coming back. What did you make of how destiny played a part in all these figures coming together?
Well, one of the things that I think has been really interesting about this last season of Star Wars Rebels is that we're getting a little bit clearer definition of how unclear the definition of the Force is. There are Jedi and there are Sith, and we've always dealt with those two factions, but we're starting to realize how much more there is to the Force. I brought up the Mortis trilogy and what it does with the Force, but then we have the whole legend of the Lasats and the way that they tap into the Force, and it has nothing to do with Jedi or Sith. It is using the Force. And so I think that what we're seeing here is that this world is so big. Maul is influenced in one way where he's still holding true to some of these principles of Sith, but he is no longer accepting the title. He's not Darth anymore. He is merely Maul. Then we have the Inquisitors who, you know, some of them are former Jedi who have traded sides, and they are not truly... Well, I guess if they're trained by a Sith, they become Sith. But the Sith, there can only be two. So these are just like dark Force users. It's crazy. So I think that what we're seeing here in this episode is all of these different ideas of what the Force is and what it can be and how it broadens the universe. But then this episode, these two episodes in particular, clears the playing field. It brings all of these ideas together and then wipes out the majority of them so that we can simplify things down to what David referenced as don't break Star Wars. When we're getting closer to Rogue One and we're getting closer to A New Hope, there's a very clear cut between one good guy, one bad guy kind of a thing. And we're trying to get the decks all stacked and ready to walk right into that universe.
Jimmy, the seduction that and you can't talk about this without just giving Sam Witwer so much props, because his Maul was charming. Was I got to tell you, he had me fooled up until the very end. He really did. I thought this was he did. Maybe I'm naive.
Yeah.
I wanted to believe. But his seduction of Ezra in a few key moments, it's almost as if Maul had been following Ezra and his interaction with Ahsoka, because there's a moment where Ahsoka, it talks about, you know, they're like, well, it was Sith Temple. Why are we doing a Sith Temple? She's to defeat your enemy, you have to understand them. And Maul says almost the exact same thing. You have to understand them. But he takes it a step further. You have to practice their ways. So, you know, it makes me wonder, has Maul been watching this one? Is Maul been, they call him a shadow. Has he been lurking in the shadows? What does he know about Ezra? Or again, are we talking about just a total coincidence here?
You know, I think much like Yoda was able to observe Luke from afar, maybe because there were so many parallels going on with the relationship between Maul and Ezra and the relationship between Yoda and Luke. Maul even says, you know, his opening line is, basically, away with your weapon. I mean you no harm. He said, put your weapon away. I mean you no harm. They were drawing parallels there. So I think so. I think that Maul could have been tapping into some sort of ability to watch Ezra from afar via the Force. And because Maul was tapping into the dark side of the Force so hard, Vader was able to track his whereabouts. There was a fountain of dark side energy coming out of Malachor, and Vader picked up on it. Even though Malachor is a Sith world, a Sith homeworld, Vader was picking up on the fact that there was somebody tipping the balance a little bit, and he wanted to go look into it. That's why he sent the Inquisitors there. Kanan, Ezra, and Ahsoka were able to track the Inquisitor to Malachor. And once it all started hitting the fan, Vader shows up in one of the greatest entrances of all time. I mean, let's face it, guys. That is rock and roll. That is heavy metal, the way he came in there riding that TIE fighter. That was heavy metal Vader.
I wanted to point out really quickly that also they – the Inquisitors refer to him as the Shadow. Well, when Darth Maul was taking over, he was the leader of the Shadow Collective. And at one point, he actually was strong-arming the Hutts, and Jabba was there present. So when Ezra said his name was Jabba, you know, Maul kind of shot him this look like, uh-huh, right.
Well, he either uses the, Jabba or Lando. Those are his aliases. I think he's used both at the time. David, what Jimmy was talking about Darth Maul and his seduction of Ezra, and perhaps, you know, he'd been watching. One of the things that, and again, Sam does such a great job. I don't know when he's being, you know, sincere and when he's lying, but do you think he really needed Ezra in order to unlock, you know, the holocron and be able to kind of turn the weapon on? Or was, you know, was he playing possum there too?
I think he did need him. I think if he didn't need it, he would have gotten it for himself a long time ago. It's interesting at the Q&A that Dave Filoni talked about how visually they had to kind of help the audience track all of the action and the different characters. And they used Donkey Kong as a way of kind of tracking everything. You know, you go up this, you go from left to right, and then you go up an elevator. Then you go from right to left, and you go up an elevator, and then until you get to the top. You know, and he actually said that in the Q&A, and it's funny because the elevators reminded me, if any of you play that old classic game Marble Madness, you know, you'd get on these, like, stone pillar elevators. And the puzzle at the beginning where he needed Ezra to use the Force reminded me very much of those kind of, like, two-player puzzles like in a Zelda game or Portal or something, where one person has to stand on one trigger in order for a wall to go through, and then you have to put the rock on, you know, like, and you're constantly having to kind of leapfrog each other. So they had to leapfrog Force lift these giant doors using your anger in order to lift them because they were so dense. I do think that was part of gaining entrance, or else Maul would have done it a long time ago. I do think, to your point, Jason, he was sincere in what he said at the beginning. The Sith took everything from me. You know, he is sincere in his feelings about the Sith, but he is also sincere in his anger and in his end game. I don't think those two are mutually exclusive, and I think that's why it's so convincing. It's so convincing because everything he says is true from a certain point of view. You know, the only thing that is that he gets away with, you know, he basically manipulates Ezra using the truth.
Not unlike what we see Count Dooku try to do with Obi-Wan in Episode 2.
Yes, very much so. You know, he's withholding one big truth, which is that the Jedi Temple is a giant weapon that he's going to use to vanquish his enemies and get revenge. He's not telling him that part.
So the whole thing is a ruse.
That little thing.
That little thing, exactly. However, everything he's saying to get to that end is true. You do need to learn about this in order to vanquish your enemies. Your master will fail. By the way, guys, why does Sam Witwer keep blinding Jedi?
Sam, you got to stop blinding Jedi. You know,
first General Coda in The Force Unleashed, and now, of course, Kanan.
It's because he's so handsome.
Yeah, well, yes, it's like, yeah, and maybe it actually does them a service, you know. Now, well, if you think about it, Kanan, like, now doesn't have to look at the handsomeness of Sam Witwer versus Darth Maul so he can focus and really lightsaber fight.
And can we talk about that Jason Voorhees shot for a second?
How about it with the helmet? Yeah.
With the helmet, I mean, first of all, what an awesome thing! I'm not making fun of it at all, but I couldn't help, like, in that one shot that see the kind of Friday the 13th. And you know, maybe how awesome would it be now? You're going to have to kill Kanan, like, I don't know, 7, 8, 10, 12, 13 times, and then there'll be a remake of Kanan, and just keep coming.
Kanan lives. Kanan goes to Manhattan. Kanan.
Kanan in space.
Yep.
Yeah, right. Kanan versus Freddy.
Yep. Hello?
Did we all drop out?
Yeah, I thought it was just me.
No.
Me too.
Swank. I was just talking, and then it beeped back.
It appears there's a problem with Swank, so let me text him and see what's going on here.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by.
Do we need to all hang up and like try again?
No, I'm here now.
There he is.
All right. He got it.
You got me now.
He's back. Yeah. He's back. So we were talking about Ram Coda, and then we were talking about the Friday the 13th vibe that David was getting off of the Jason Voorhees look that Kanan had acquired. So,
yeah. So, what I was just going to say is, you know, I mean, all kidding aside, though, with the Jason Voorhees comment. To go back to just Darth Maul in general, your comment, Jason, I thought that Sam brought one of the most refreshing, amazing, just dimensions to this character, which started out as such a boogeyman in The Phantom Menace. And now we know him to be this like extremely nuanced guy that's just been to hell and back. And what an incredible arc, just within two episodes. And I just was so, as a Star Wars fan, I was moved by these two episodes. I just thought they were incredible. I saw Dave Filoni, and I was just like, you're a genius. I mean, it's really, really hard to pull off what he pulled off in just 42 minutes. And Darth Maul, I mean, to me, stole the show. Even when Vader showed up, and Vader and Ahsoka was a huge thing, it was like, you got Vader and Ahsoka, we've all been thinking about that for so long, and you got Maul. It was incredible.
One of the other things that I thought was amazing about that scene in that showdown with Kanan and Maul is that here Kanan is blinded. He's rolling around on the ground trying to find something. He reaches for the mask, and the mask that he finds is the Jedi Temple guard's mask. So now, just because he found this here, it means that we are learning that those masks have been around forever. The Jedi Temple Guard, this ancient order, has actually been in that battle on Malachor. And we learn so much more about them from even being there that now Kanan almost becomes like one of those Jedi Temple Guards. In the same way that the Inquisitor, you know, previously was a guard, he had taken on this new mantle, this new role. I thought it was awesome to see the mask there as well.
It was very cool. It was very cool, and I like the allusion to these guards and kind of what is about what perhaps Kanan's role is going to be. And you know, Tyler, you know, this blinding of Kanan. Do you think this is something that we're going to be dealing with permanently, or are we going to be looking at, you know, maybe this is something that he's going to have to deal with for a few episodes into next season? Or is this his character now?
I think it's absolutely his character. Looking at screenshots that I have, Kanan does not have eyes anymore. So I don't think he's going to be cured of his blindness anytime soon, but I also don't think the blindness is going to be a huge issue for him. I think it's going to make his character a lot more interesting. In the prequels, it's established that all the younglings have to go through training with that gigantic, salad bowl on their head? With their going with the blaster bolts back and forth. So, right. I mean, he already has some experience, and I think it's just going to make him, I guess, stronger with the Force and more connected to it than he was before, because the character David referenced earlier, Ram Coda, after he was blinded, he became even more like philosophical Jedi-ish than he was already. And when we started, Kanan was sort of like a, I don't want to be a Jedi, but I am sort of cowboy type of character. Then the ghost of the Grand Inquisitor in the vision basically said, you're a Jedi Knight. Maybe Kanan will be taking his steps to becoming a Jedi Master in some way. But I'm really excited to see what they do with the Kanan now blind, Kanan has no eyes plot.
Does he really have no eyes?
There's an album I sent you, very top row. It's a
I lost Kanan. My internet connection, so I can't see it.
Yeah, sure thing.
Yeah,
it's there's a picture I'm looking at right now. His face is basically like half black and red. And there are no eyes where there should be eyes.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm pretty sure that he's he has no chance of getting like an eye transplant or anything like that.
Okay, well, I didn't realize. I thought it was. I thought it might have been a temporary, condition. I didn't realize that it was, an actual disfigurement, So that that does dramatically change certainly the trajectory of that character, and we'll see. I mean, he was being led around by Chopper like a seeing eye dog there there at the end.
Well, he's been blind for 5 minutes. He's not an expert in walking around. I think it'd be cool.
I think you need to put one of those little blue vests on Chopper so that he can go to the mall without getting thrown out.
Right on the.
I think it'd be really
cool. Show up in Hell's Kitchen next.
Don't pet my droid. He's working.
I heard that there were going to be some like character redesigns in the next season. Yeah, Ezra obviously is going to need a new lightsaber because his was broken, which I'm very happy about. But I think it'd be cool if they gave Kanan like a walking stick lightsaber type of thing, sort of like Maul had.
Oh, I actually really like Peter Mayhew has.
Yeah,
Peter Mayhew like has a cane. That's a lightsaber. Jimmy, this super weapon, this Sith super weapon. Now, this is now in terms of Star Wars that we've seen on the screen, this is now the third such super weapon. If we look at Starkiller Base, we look at the Death Star, we could say fourth, because there was at the very beginning of the Clone Wars, there was an arc about a super weapon that Grievous was carrying around. Do you think that the Death Star and perhaps these other super weapons that come about are based on this Sith technology?
Ooh, that's a great question, Jason, because the only thing that I've ever considered to power the technology of the Death Star laser are those kyber crystals. And that's a relatively new wrinkle in the canon. So to consider the fact that they're able to harness some sort of raw Sith energy and use it for the purposes of like a weapon of mass destruction, AKA the Death Star. That's interesting. My dog apparently wants to go out. So let me finish.
Tiki, come on. Well, Tiki, we're recording. Tiki.
What? I mean, do you think you're one of Kyle Newman's dogs? He thinks he's Kyle Newman's dogs.
Oh, I was going to say. Yeah, right.
Well, Jason, you asked the perfect question, because that question actually, StarWars.com in their trivia gallery actually makes reference to that exact question. So in the trivia gallery, it has a reference to the unfinished episode in the Crystal Crisis on Utapau, that arc that was going to be in the Clone Wars that didn't make it because they didn't finish all of those episodes. This is what it says. Yoda makes mention of an ancient Sith super weapon powered by kyber crystals. The infernal machine of the Sith temple is a rare example of an intact one. So yes, Jimmy, you're right. Just off the top of your head, you completely remembered all of your Star Wars knowledge. The kyber crystal is powering that ancient Sith weapon, and this was referenced in the Crystal Crisis on Utapau.
Maul also refers to it as a battle station, not as a temple. He says, Ahsoka, I'm going to take control of this battle station, which caught me a little off guard. I'm like, are they going to have like the temple rise up in the air and become a ship? That'd be interesting.
Yeah. That does then, I think, create some connection between these super weapons that we've seen and the evolution of these super weapons. Now, what we see in The Force Awakens is clearly powered by a star, sun, and there doesn't seem to be any, crystals or Sith energy or anything along those lines, but it's interesting to watch these things evolve. It's one theme that runs through all of the talk about this episode from the creative team, particularly Dave Filoni, is the balance, how he was able to balance all of these rock stars of Star Wars in really all within the last, say, you know, last act of this whole arc. We know that there's been great reluctance on Dave's part in the past to go to the well with some of these characters. Darth Vader, he takes the responsibility very seriously. David, are you with us?
David?
Oh, mute. I'm sorry, I was on mute.
That's okay. With respect to Darth Vader and his, you know, utility in this particular episode, Jimmy alluded to his entrance, which was heavy metal. You know, do you think that Vader was used wisely here? Was he? You had even mentioned that he was perhaps overshadowed or upstaged a couple of times. How does this Vader fare against the Vader that we, you know and love and are terrified of in the original trilogy?
You know, I guess it's a mistake to say that he was overshadowed, because by the time he got there, his entrance was so good, and they got rid of Maul very quickly with Kanan, you know. So it's not that he was upstaged, because, you know, he had his own moment. It's just that it came after such an incredibly, not surprisingly satisfying, but just a surprise storytelling twist with Darth Maul that I was still just tripping over. And then Vader shows up and I'm like, this just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger this episode. You know, we just treated to all of that, and now we're going to get this showdown that we've been thinking about ever since Ahsoka showed up again on Rebels. I couldn't take it. It was like, it wasn't just a great episode of Rebels. It was a great moment in Star Wars for me when I was watching this episode, because it was just so jam-packed with, like I said, earth-shifting moments in the storytelling. And I thought Vader was treated very well. You know, James Earl Jones is just such a treat to listen to. And I love that he is such a, as Dave Filoni puts it, a monolith, you know, to be reckoned with. I think after everything we've been through with so many seasons of Ahsoka in the Clone Wars, I think it's okay to go to the well with Vader. I think you kind of have to, after George and Dave together worked so closely on giving Anakin a meaningful Padawan in Ahsoka, that means that eventually you are going to have to go to the well and pay it off. You just have to. And they did that very well. Just like I was saying before, you have to wrap her story up, and the only way to do it is to make it epic, because it was epic to begin with. They were using core characters in the Clone Wars. Right. When Rebels started out, it was characters we'd never heard of. The Clone Wars were all the main cast of the movies. Obi-Wan, Anakin.
Right.
So you have to have Ahsoka be right in the thick of these crazy classic legendary Star Wars characters like Vader. And I thought they did it very well.
Can I bounce Jimmy, off that really quick?
Yeah, go for it.
This might sound odd, but I think it might have to do with the fact that I'm young. And I saw the movies. I didn't see them in order. I saw them at different points in my life. This episode was one of the first times that I really thought in my head that Darth Vader is Anakin Skywalker, because there's always been a disconnect in my mind. There were very few times when I actually thought, oh, Anakin Skywalker is Darth Vader and Darth Vader is Anakin Skywalker. And that's at the end of the Return of the Jedi, episode 3, when he actually gets put in the suit. And then at one point in the Darth Vader comics, seeing Anakin's face when Ahsoka slashes Darth Vader's helmet, I paused the episode and I sort of sat back in my seat and was like, that is really, really, really interesting. Because even though Vader talks about Anakin, he constantly talks about how Anakin was killed. And just seeing the actual body of Anakin Skywalker not in this gigantic monolithic suit, I think added even more to the character. I don't think it did any disjustice to Vader at all. I think this might be one of my favorite times we've actually ever seen Vader in all of Star Wars media, not just the films.
By the way, Tyler, I don't think your comment was odd at all about the disconnect between Vader and Anakin. I think that's, you know, a lot of older fans, I think, feel the same. I think everyone feels the same way, that there is a disconnect because he is different. There is a retrofit nature to the prequels on top of the classic trilogy. You can feel it. It's almost impossible not to. You know, it's the same with Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. You know, it's you know, older fans see it as a criticism. You know, I actually just think it's just, you know, it's just the nature of going and telling prequels. You know, it's really hard.
Yeah, and that's not a knock on the prequels at all. It's just this nature of the character. And not seeing his face. And you see his face twice, like in the suit. Now you see the third.
Yeah, and what Rebels has done is it gave us a new Anakin and a new Vader, you know, and so Rebels is in a unique position to bring them together in a way that's more cohesive.
You also have to be in a position where you accept the fact that Vader and Anakin are actually two different entities. They're two different personalities. They're two different people.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, and really, did that got validated. Both. That got richly validated in this episode when Ahsoka revealed after Order 66, she tried to reach out to Anakin Skywalker and got nothing. She got the busy single, you know, no one was home. And that is because
literally
Anakin Skywalker was dead, Tyler.
That's because and it's something that was very poignant in this episode is that when Vader was talking, it was James Earl Jones, and you could hear the mechanics behind the voice box, et cetera, et cetera. When the mask was sliced open and you got to see inside and you saw that eye, and the eyebrow didn't bother me at all. When you saw the eye in there and you saw it was actually Anakin, when he spoke, it was Matt Lantern again, and he said, Ahsoka. And at that moment, Ahsoka changed the way that she was addressing the whole situation. It was like a person who is possessed by an evil spirit and they're locked inside of their own body and they're powerless to like be in control here, but they know everything that's going on. They were conscious that whole time seeing the evil that was happening. And at that moment when it was open, the shell was broken back and she saw that Anakin was still in there. And that was the moment where things shifted a little bit, but then Vader took over and it was right back to where it was.
Yeah, you saw a little bit of the good in Anakin and then it was quickly
No, you saw none of the good in Anakin. I dispute that 1,000%. Well, just because we hear stop. Let me finish my thought. Let me finish my thought, Tyler. Because of the fact that we heard Matt Lanter's voice doesn't mean that we're seeing the light within Anakin. I don't think we ever see the light within Anakin, and he confirms that when he reveals to her that she needs to die. I mean, when somebody says that, they're miles away from redemption. I don't think we saw any sign of
Tyler's
the light
right,
side.
You're wrong.
There's
two distinct different beats in that Ahsoka that Matt Lanter gives, that line, that is him reaching out. That is a chink in the Vader, literally a break in the armor for a split second.
No,
I think Dave has sort of walked this back. Reed. Dave has walked this back in interviews in saying that, no, that's not the case.
That's not the case.
Luke is the only one that can redeem Vader and all of that.
Exactly.
And that's fine. We're not talking Vader about redemption here, but we're talking about a glimmer, a glimpse. No. We do get it.
No, it was
if
the seduction.
You're willing to see it, Jimmy Mac,
it was,
do see it.
He was trying to seduce Ahsoka, and he was trying to reach out to her under the guise of the Anakin she remembered and loved so much. He was trying to lure her in. That was a trap. Total trap.
No.
Nope. She didn't break through.
No. Okay, so this was not just the end of the road for Ahsoka. This was also, according to Dave Filoni, this is really the winding down the whole story of the Inquisitors. So, according to him, the Inquisitors have done their job. What did you think of the Inquisitors? Starting back with, the Grand Master, the whatever his name was. Now through a total of four that we've had, and their role that they played in the Star Wars universe.
I thought that these other Inquisitors, the fifth brother, which is the new one, the seventh sister, and the eighth, is that right? Eighth brother? They all pale in comparison. Eighth brother's the new one. They all pale in comparison to the Grand Inquisitor. I thought that they were just sort of like, you know, the up and comers. They didn't have the same screen presence or power. As far as body count goes, I think that all of the Inquisitors are done except for the eighth brother. The new one, right? When he did the go-go, saber copter, you know, go gadget copter, and he flew off the end of the temple there, and he crashed. There's a chance that he survived that. I mean, Maul
actually
survived.
I don't think there is. There was an interview that Dave did he did an interview with IGN, and he said that there was a scene that was cut, and this might mean it's invalidated, but the weapon in the Sith temple turns people to stone who are on the outside. And you saw a shot of the eighth brother alive on the ground running towards a ship, and then he gets hit with the explosion, and you see him just turn to stone. And then Maul is like underneath, he's underground, so he can see the eighth brother turn into stone. Then Maul steals the eighth brother's TIE fighter. But no, I think the eighth brother is absolutely 100% dead. I think we're going to get a new batch of Inquisitors, honestly, and then they'll be wiped out as well.
I thought he stole Vader's TIE fighter.
No. No, it was clearly it was the same ship that Chopper had shanghaied earlier in the first part of this double parter, when he opened fire on the eighth brother. That was his TIE fighter.
Oh, okay.
That was specifically the TIE fighter of the eighth brother.
Speaking of Vader's TIE fighter, I really want to see the scene that obviously was cut because they had to have made it. Of Vader parking his TIE fighter and thinking, I'm going to look really cool. I'm going to climb up on top of this and then I'm going to put it in autopilot and ride down and scare the crap out of this little kid with this stupid lightsaber.
It's all about appearances. Everyone knows that. When you're a Sith Lord, you know, it's go big or go home. You got to make a grand entrance.
Well, we could talk for another hour on this episode, both of these episodes. But there's some pretty striking imagery that they leave us with, including a shot of a red-eyed Ezra. This is the reflection of the Sith holocron that he has managed to open. And in order to open this, you, according to Darth Maul, you need to be a Sith. But he managed to open this. What, David W. Collins, what should we be looking for in terms of, clues about what Ezra may be, actually?
Boy, I loved that Ezra was flirting more and more with the dark side, and I loved the conflict. I loved the exchange where he was being seduced by Maul away from Kanan. I even love that we come as a two-pack. You know, I was like, is that like a nod to collectors there? There was a little breaking of the fourth wall, you know, if you're familiar with that phrase, for listeners that are familiar with it, in this episode that I just thought was really, it was really fun. But anyway, I mean, I think that season three is just going to be incredibly interesting. I mean, is Coda's, I just called him Coda. I can't believe I did that. Is Kanan's... Is Kanan's blindness actually going to help him or hurt him? What's it going to do to Ezra? What is Maul going to? I mean, Maul survives. That right there. I mean, it happens in one shot. But the fact that Maul is going to be back in season three because he survived, and the fact that Ezra's now got a Sith holocron. I think we're just seeing the very beginning of where this is going to go. I mean, there's going to be some epic showdowns. And again, something has to happen with Maul before episode four, right? Something has to happen with all the Jedi, all the Inquisitors, all the everything before episode four, right? And correct me if I'm wrong on this, and maybe not. Maybe it'll spill in and it's just stuff that's happening in the Outer Rim or whatever. But I mean, this stuff... is it, we're creating. I mean, I just love that they're opening things up. But one of my biggest compliments about this show, and Dave did the same thing in the Clone Wars, is that I used to say back in the day, you know, I didn't really like it in the movie where Anakin and Dooku fought on Tatooine in the 2008 release, because we know it's a push. We know it's not going to go anywhere. We know that Dooku is going to be, you know, they're going to be back. They're going to fight in Sith. Nothing happens to these guys, right? So you've got these pillars that are immovable. Well, what they keep doing is introducing these new fascinating characters that interact with these pillars, and then those characters take over the show, and it's just breathtaking. You know, Ahsoka is the perfect example of that. Now we've got Maul, and Maul is now, you know, such a compelling... Look, nothing against the Inquisitors. I thought the Inquisitors were really smart because it was a way to, you know, shield us from... from Vader in every episode. But now you've got Maul as this, as the big bad in season three. That's so interesting to me. And Ezra, not only is he the bad guy, but Ezra's kind of like caught in the middle. So it's more of like a relationship drama. I can't wait. I just can't wait.
Yeah. Red-eyed Ezra, Jimmy Mack.
Yeah. Well, you know,
what do you think?
Taylor Gray brought this up at the screening, and he thought that he was either seeing at the, you're talking about the last shot of the show when it appears that Ezra starts to unlock the Sith holocron. Earlier in the episode, we heard Ahsoka say, there's no way a Jedi can open a Sith holocron. So what does this mean for Ezra? He's got some dark side deep in the core. And so he was able to tap into this. Now, the question is, and this is what Taylor brought up, are we seeing Ezra's eyes turn Sith red as he begins to operate that holocron, or are we simply seeing brilliant animation taking place where we're getting the reflection of the Sith holocron in Ezra's eyes?
I think it's definitely the reflection.
Thank you.
It's definitely the reflection.
Yes, that's exactly how I feel.
It's done very purposely.
Oh, so you think it's a bit of foreshadowing, maybe, or just some sort of symbolic representation of the dark side rising up within Ezra? It's amazing because Ezra has these.
No, I don't think so.
Well, we'll get to that in a second, Spence. But I think it's amazing that Ezra has what appears to be deep rooted dark side. Gosh. I don't even know, tendencies, abilities. It's something that is gradually becoming untapped within him. That's how it appears to me. It's more than just Anakin Skywalker sliding to the dark side. It appears that Ezra's connection to the dark side almost appears to be a natural inclination for him, going back to destiny. But I think it's even beyond that. It's something that's actually deep-seated within him. Where I don't see that with Anakin Skywalker. I see a guy who was used and abused and confused. I don't get that so much with Ezra. Something seems a little bit natural about Ezra's connection to the dark side. And that's a scary thing to consider, especially since he has so much bitterness in his life, due to the fact that his parents were ripped away from him, due to the fact that he's lost everything. He's constantly on the run. He has to wear orange clothing all the time. I mean, God, please, a new character model for Ezra would be nice, especially if he is sliding toward the dark side. Give him a darker wardrobe, just like they did with Anakin Skywalker in episode two, when they dressed him up.
Well, I think darker. That's coming. I've heard rumors.
Oh, you have?
I've heard rumors of a shorter haired. Yeah, I've heard rumors of a shorter haired, more grown up looking Ezra.
Coming. I would love to see
them. I don't know if that's.
I would love to see them take risks with the character. I would love to see them push it really far. Let Ezra completely slide into the dark side. Make Ezra become an inquisitor. I've been hearing noise that Sabine's character is going to rise in prominence as season three continues, and we're also going to get some more Mandalorian action. Could it be that Sabine will then become the foil for Ezra as Ezra slides into the dark side and Kanan is blind in more ways than one to Ezra's slide to the dark side?
Mm.
It occurs to me about this.
No, go for it, David.
Give it to David.
Sorry. Go for it.
Let David have it. Give you the last word.
I had something too.
I was just going to say, it occurs to me that what is so nice about this episode is that the red glow in Ezra's eyes and what happens to Ahsoka, it really is something for us to decide. I mean, the red glow in Ezra's eyes really is a projection of our own fears. How are we as an audience are going to react to it? Did we see it? Did we not? And it's interesting that, you know, a lot of this episode, what's in this episode is only what we take with us. There you go.
There you go.
But
now the theme.
Oh,
I wanted to.
No, 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 it's over. It's got to be over sometime. We'll be back next season. All right. See, we're still chomping at the bit to talk more about this episode. But what a great time and what a great way to end season two of Rebels, Twilight of the Apprentice. I think that it probably asked more questions than it answered, but that's really, that is when Star Wars is at its best, when it's open for interpretation. Though I'm sure there will be some sort of planet guidebook that will be published that will answer all the questions that we have about. Can't you see that? There's going to be some atlas that's going to come out and say, this was the planet where Ahsoka Tano died. It'll be like, see, it's in the Atlas.
Oh,
I'm telling you. All right. Well, great times.
Death and an appendix.
Great times with our panel. Tyler, thank you very much for being on the program. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Spencer Brinkerhoff III. Spence, always a pleasure to have you also. I know you wanted to get some one other comment in there. Do you still want to do that? Now's the time. I'm giving you the floor.
Real quick, I'm pretty sure that Maul said you have to be a Sith or think like a Sith. And I'm remembering that the holocron actually opened, and thinking like a Sith doesn't mean that you actually are a Sith. The Force is changing. Spencer B3.
Thank you for remembering the line. You're absolutely, absolutely right.
Should I set my Twitter handle? Oh, dang it.
Oh, yeah. Tyler, yeah. Yeah, plug your Twitter handle. Plug it.
You can follow me on Twitter at T Westhouse. If you go to StarWars.com, you can see some of the stuff I've written.
You can read it, too. Yeah, yeah. And of course, the official Rebel Force Radio community on Facebook. David W. Collins.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being on, man.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. This was a lot of fun, and looking forward to chatting more. Of course, you can always check out Star Wars Oxygen on the Rebel Force Radio Network. And, boy, I can't wait for season three of Star Wars Rebels.
And Celebration Europe, I believe it's been confirmed that you're once again hosting the digital stage.
That, yes. So, yes, Star Wars Celebration Europe, I'll be there hosting some stage. I don't know if it's called the digital stage. So I don't know what they're calling it in over on the other side of the pond. We'll have to find out. I'll be pleasantly surprised, but hopefully I'll get to see a lot of listeners there as well.
I think they call it Digital Stage.
Where's Paul?
Yeah, where's Paul? All right, Jimmy Mac, final thoughts. Twilight of the Apprentice, go.
All right, Jason, what a wang-bang conclusion to season two. I'm already missing Ahsoka. And I feel terrible that she's trapped. Her spirit, her Force spirit, is trapped within that collapsed Sith temple. That's apparently it's underground on the planet Malachor too. So she's been buried more than a couple of times. Could that be Dave Filoni sending us a message? I don't know. It is convenient though the way that Dave did sort of orchestrate her grand finale, because the door is left open a little bit. And I'm not counting Ahsoka Tano out at all. But I think we are going to be in a position where we're going to miss her for quite a while. Yeah, her return, who knows? Maybe live action. Maybe there is a live-action future for Ahsoka Tano. We shall see. Just a couple of simple observations about these episodes. I thought it was very Indiana Jones, very Raiders of the Lost Ark, as Ezra snagged the Sith holocron and the temple started to collapse a little bit. You know, it very Indiana Jones. And I heard callbacks to The Force Awakens, too, with the way Kanan was relating to Ezra. He's using you. Very Han to Kylo Ren warning him about the lure of the dark side. Again, I don't think there was any light breaking through. I don't think Anakin Skywalker was making a grand return, especially after Ahsoka smacked him in the face with her sabers and he didn't see it coming. That wasn't something that all of a sudden started to redeem Anakin Skywalker. That wasn't something that yes, brought him back. That was not anything that brought him back. I think when he said her name and you could slightly hear his real voice, that still wasn't the voice of Anakin Skywalker. You were hearing the voice of Darth Vader 100%. He was trying to lure him, lure her to the dark side, I should say. So, and Swank, I'll never forget that "you're wrong, Tyler's right" comment you made either. I'll never forget that one.
I'll never forget it either, Jason. Thank you for seeing the light and realizing I am correct.
All right. Once again, these are my last words, not Tyler's. The Sith presence within the Sith temple. I made reference to it, but the main thing that voice taught us was knowledge is power, which is something I know I learned in the 70s watching Schoolhouse Rock on ABC during Saturday morning cartoons. So, who knows? Maybe there's an evil force behind both the Sith and Schoolhouse Rock. Puffer Pig, not in this episode. What a great episode.
All right, that's it. We'll be out until next season. I think we'll probably be kicking things off, if they stay true to form, with some sort of movie of the week. That'll kick off season 3 during the summer, and then the season will officially begin in the fall. Again, if they stay true to what they've done in the past. So we'll keep you informed right here on Rebel Force Radio. Thanks so much for joining us. What a great season. Thanks to all of our guests throughout season 2. Appreciate it very much, and we will be with you when Rebels returns. That's it for us. For Rebel Force Radio, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jabba.
And remember,
Force will be with you always.
Percent of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
92% because of a bike?
Not just bikes. We also make treadmills and rowers.
Oh, let me guess, for elite athletes only, right?
Nope. It doesn't matter if you're an avid exerciser or new to working out. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try Peloton bikes, tread, or row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.